The only thing we really do all together at the same time is sing. And I really felt for Mendel today with all of the voices compromised this morning. Obviously, I hear a lot of coughing, not just me. A lot of people out who are normally singing out. What it did for me, though, was it made me think of this verse. Really at the end of, not the end, but in verse 15 and 16 of Ephesians 4. Rather, speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in every way into Him who is the head, into Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and held together by every joint with which it is equipped, when each part is working properly, makes the body grow so that it builds itself up in love. When every part really works together, and it just like comes together incredibly, but when a lot of the parts are compromised, we struggle more, don't we? I think that, I actually incredibly enjoyed singing together when we were all struggling. A lot of voices struggling, because I think that's what life most of the time is. It doesn't always go smooth. It doesn't always go exactly the way we want it to go. But we all keep pressing on. We all keep pushing on. Isn't that really the message of life? But so just some thoughts there, kind of a separate little lesson from my normal lesson here this morning. But been talking about, started a couple weeks ago, talking about life, and I asked a couple weeks ago on your homework assignment was, what does life mean to you? What does it mean to have life? What does it mean to have it abundantly? You know, John 10 and verse 10, Jesus said He came that we might have life and that we might have it abundantly. And as mentioned before, that passage has been used by certain people, certain Christians have taken that to mean that we will have an abundance of stuff. But last week, we pointed out, excuse me, give me my drink thing there, wouldn't you? Thank you. Sorry about that. Hopefully, I might have somebody have to fill this after a bit. The life isn't in stuff. Jesus said that. Life is not possessions. Life is not in the accumulation of things. That's not where life is. And He actually warned the rich young ruler, especially, who had an abundance of stuff and who couldn't follow Him, that, you know, you have to be careful. There's a temptation to want stuff and think our life will be better with stuff. I was going to make mention of this a little bit last week because it probably was a little more timely. Didn't really fit into the lesson talking last week, but I'm assuming a lot of people know who Tiger Woods is. Have known what happened last week when he was arrested DUI. Wasn't drinking alcohol. He had pain pills he had been taking, sleep, his car, on the side of the road, still running, dangerous, and then I heard all the talk about it. I don't know if he has a problem. I don't know if it was a one-time thing. I have no idea. But 10 years ago, before his wife took a 2-iron to their SUV window, when she found out he had been committing adultery with untold numbers of women, we would have thought, wow, want that life. See, the facade sometimes of riches and power, prestige, we sometimes get sucked into thinking, wow, that's the life. How often do you see, like, pictures or posting, and people go, wow, that's the life. Somebody sitting on a beach in, French Riviera. The French Riviera. Adding a whole new word, syllable in there. But on the French Riviera, we like, oh, wow, how great is that? If you're laying on a beach with your eyes closed, kind of, sun on you, on the French Riviera versus, on a beach up in McCall, is life really that different? What's really the difference between that air and the other? One might be a little more sea, might smell that ocean breeze a bit more. But I think sometimes we think life is in abundance. That's what Jesus warned us about. It's not in stuff. And so what he's trying to give us, this abundant life he wants us to have, and I'd like to ask you this question as you think about it. Do you think we've given some, we've sent some food and things over, some money over to Zimbabwe. There's some Christians who have so little that if we send over $1,000, we can feed, you know, the whole congregation for months. And I think there was 70% unemployment in Zimbabwe, something like that. Is the promise of life and abundant life to that? Did Jesus do it for them too? Is it not available to them? You see, I think we, and think about it, other parts of the world, could they imagine the whining and complaining that Americans do? Americans have been among the wealthiest population of people the earth has ever seen. Our poor are often heavy. What other country of the world, the poor who have nothing to eat, are really heavy? Most of the time we think of it, we see starving people. We sometimes don't grasp, I think, how much and how good we have it. I remember a brother of mine who had gone to, I can't remember what country it was now, but he'd gone to a poor country, and he'd been doing some teaching, preaching there. And one of the Christians in that country asked them, I don't know how you guys do it. How do you be faithful with all the stuff you have? How do you seek God having all that stuff? They think of it as, boy, if you have so much, you're so rich, you wouldn't even seek God. We have nothing. That's why we seek help from God. And so I've been trying to really look at scriptures. I've been thinking about it myself. I've been doing a lot of reading. And not just Christians, what they think about life, just people in general, what they think about life. What is it to mean to be life? And so I've even just Facebook, you know, stalking on Facebook. Or I heard a new word for it, a voyeur. Not sure that's better. But just kind of seeing what everybody says. And the concepts, I see this phrase, life is good. Ever done that? It's like we just post, well, life is good. Does everybody post, life stinks today? We don't probably post that as much. I do have a couple of friends that do post that quite a bit. But, but what is it, and so I'm trying to define, what does it mean, why is life good sometimes and not good at other times? What has changed? We're still breathing. We're still, our hearts are still beating. We still, our physical bodies still have life in them. What's different? What makes life really worth living sometimes, and other times we hate it? And I think it has to do with us. I don't think it has to do with us, what we're surrounded by. Do you know that if you talk about how happy people are, do you know that America does not rate that high in the world? We're not, when people just rate how happy they are, all these different countries, lots of places that don't have nearly the amount of stuff we have say they're happier. Now, is it just happiness? I don't know if that's all there is to life. I think there's more than that, but I think that's part of it. I think a lot of times when we're feeling blessed and we're like, oh, this is the moment in life, you know, that we just remember. I think everybody gets it, too. I can think even growing up in kind of a difficult family, but I still remember moments in life, maybe vacations and camping or a trip to Yosemite. I remember those are some of those days and mornings and are burned into my head as like, wow, I want that again. That to me is like, that was great. I want it again. And I think a lot of us have that those kind of moments, and we want to try to relive those things. But trying to fulfill Jesus' desire for us to have a life beyond what is ordinary. And I think that's what the word abundance means. It doesn't mean to have a lot of stuff. It means to have beyond what's necessary, beyond what's ordinary. That's what Jesus wants and desires for us. And so my goal was trying to figure out what does that look like so that I know when I've got this. I think I probably already have had it and have not recognized it a lot. But what is it that he's talking about? And so last week, the focus was more about what it isn't. It's not in the flesh. It's not in stuff. It is, as Romans 8 talks about, it is when we have our minds set upon the Spirit of God. That's when life really has a chance to be fulfilled in us. Now, what makes life worth living? So, in doing a lot of different reading, came across a blog from about 7 years ago now. But as a guy, he's a psychologist, a PhD, and he wrote a book called "The Brain and the Meaning of Life." And he said part of his blog said, "Here are some possible answers to the question of what makes life worth living." One is nothing. And so he kind of, in his answers about nothing, he goes to all the philosophers that said there is no purpose in life. Second is religion. Third is happiness. And the fourth, he says, is love, work, and play, which his book is about, by the way, showing us that psychology and neuroscience supports that love, work, and play, those three things together in everybody's life, is what makes people think life is really worth living. That's what his whole book's about. On his book page, there was some quotes or some reviews, and so one of them was from New Scientist, said a thoughtful and well-researched attempt to answer that most fundamental existential question, why not kill yourself? Really? Everybody has that fundamental question? Some people's view, I think, of fundamentals of life is a little skewed. But I don't think that's the fundamental existential question everybody asks. But he says, but to give it a positive spin, what gives life meaning? And Thagard lays out detailed arguments that reality is knowable through science, that minds are nothing other than material brains, and that they're just a bunch of goo. And that gray goo, by the way, and that there are no ultimate rights and wrongs handed down by a supernatural being. So I haven't read his book, but some reviewers really likes the idea that here's a meaning of life that doesn't have anything to do with God. Wow, that's awesome. I think that's what they're saying. They're like, they love that. They probably don't believe in God. They don't want to believe in God. But what he does, what I was interested in, was his answer about religion. Why religion isn't the answer. So, and this is his quote in the blog, and this is in total on the religion section. Surveys indicate that many people report that religion and spirituality are major sources of meaning in their lives. So when psychologists go out and social scientists, they survey people, lots and lots of people talk about their religion, their faith as being the thing that gives them meaning. Now, he's going to attack that, but he says, unfortunately, however, these sources are bogus if there is no evidence to support claims for particular religious beliefs. Now, that statement, I think, is true. We have one of the books here. One of the reasons that we had focused for the last couple of years on the evidences of Jesus Christ, a real man who died, who was, crucified, buried, and rose again on the third day, if those things aren't true, the rest of it is a lot of lies. And that's why it's, even in Paul talks about it in 1 Corinthians 15, it is the foundation of all of our faith, that Jesus was real, that he was God in the flesh, who was crucified as our Passover lamb, and who rose again, and who sits at the right hand of God. Otherwise, as 1 Corinthians 15 also points out, if that's not true, if there he hasn't been resurrected, then none of us have been resurrected. And we are of all people in the world the most to be pitied. Because we're all duped. So in one sense, I agree with him. Without evidence, now, a lot of faith doesn't have evidence. In fact, a lot of people talk about faith in the sense of, well, I don't really know, I just take it on faith. I mean, that concept of faith is so separate from what God means by faith. In fact, that's why you guys hear it a lot. I talk about the word faith. The Greek word that we translate faith most often is, I think, better translated for us in the way we understand the words to mean trust. Because I think that's more closely what it refers to. I trust in something or somebody. Not just I believe it exists or I believe it might be real or I just kind of, I want to believe it. I trust it. That's what it means. And so he goes on, he said, religious faith may be reassuring, but cannot objectively tell you whether you should adhere to Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, some other religion. Faith cannot tell you what version of Christianity or Islam you ought to adopt. Hence, religion and vague spiritual ideas like everything happens for a reason cannot provide a sound basis for living. Vague spiritual ideas, by the way, he obviously doesn't understand, and he probably can't go to the passage that says, you know, that whatever happens, happens, you know, to be as a blessing for those who are Christians. You know, Romans talks about the concept that, you know, that sometimes bad things happen to us, but God can turn that around for good. Now, he probably doesn't really know what the scriptures teach in those things, but he hears religious people, oh, everything happens for a reason. That might be true, but, you know, sometimes the reason's not good. You know, some people, things happen to them because God was judging them. So, but it, you might see this as a little weird. I actually agree with him. At least in the sense of this, that some vague sense of spirituality or religion does not give meaning. That just some basic kind of have just like, yeah, you know, I like the idea of faith. I had a good friend growing up in high school, and he was kind of raised religious, but he wasn't really very religious, guys. Hasn't been as an adult at all. But I remember having a conversation with him in high school, and he was like, I just really love I love the concept of religion. I think, and in fact, he was talking about Catholic Church. I just love that. The concept of it, just the image of it. He loved that. He didn't really like all the teachings, didn't like all the stuff. He just liked the idea of it. I think a lot of people like the idea of stuff until it gets down to the actual doing of stuff. And that's kind of where things change, doesn't it? And so I would argue that God has been urging us for thousands of years, in fact, at least 3,000, to live out the very things that Thagard claims psychology and neuroscience just figured out. That namely, that to love, to work, and to play are really the essence of what God wants us to do in life. And so, in fact, I read that, I went, you know, all of a sudden, a bunch of passages came to mind about love, right? How many of us could turn to a passage right now about love? 1 Corinthians 13, right? You go right over there. 1 John, most of the book of 1 John is about love. The word love comes in numerous times. They have other passages that just kind of come right to your head. Work. How many of you think of a passage make work is such a blessing? Now, I'll tell you what. People who have lost jobs and been out of work for a while, they get the concept of the blessing of work. Sometimes we get tired when we're working. We're like, oh, I got to go in. Maybe my first day of the new work week comes along and we're tired. But when it's taken away from you and you can't do it at all, that hurts. And people who get, you know, who go back to it, like, oh, it's such a blessing to have a job, to be able to work. play. I would say, now I don't think God uses the word play in that way, but I do think what he means, I would argue that God's term for play, though, is more accurately described as enjoying the good things in life, the fruits of your life, whether that's your family, your children, your grandchildren, your friends, your neighbors, that peanut butter and jelly sandwich you got to eat for lunch. I got to tell you, I was asked about, I'd been preaching, I guess, about 5 years. I closed up a business where I was building homes to start preaching. And so a good friend of mine, I was back visiting home, my first home, and a friend of mine, his wife asked me, how did I like this work compared to what work I used to do? I said, well, it is different. I said, you know, this work is like, I never really see a finished product. You just keep doing it. You just keep doing the work, and sometimes things, you know, what you do, sometimes seems like it's working well, sometimes it seems going well, kind of waves back and forth, and, you know, you teach people, and they come to Christ, and their lives change, and then you see them walk away. And like all those things happen. And the difference about building a house is if I kind of watch the house over a long term, it might feel the same way. But building a house, I could always just build it. When I was done, go, wow, that was really nice. It felt really good about it. And you can see it finished product, then I could walk away onto something else. And I said, I kind of missed that. But the other thing I said I missed was actually just sitting on a stack of lumber. And I could smell the green wood of the lumber. And just eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich with my old friend, my old business partner. And when we started our company, we were both scraping. We were both like, yeah, we sometimes like, hey, I've got some extra peanut butter in my house. I've got some extra this in my house. We did not ever go out and get anything to eat. We sometimes just had, that's all we might have, peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Or a peanut butter sandwich sometimes. But those were some great moments of life. We forget those things at times, and sometimes we fail to recognize them in the moment. That there are moments of every day that are a real blessing. A lot of times we grow up thinking, and as a child, I can't wait till I'm 10. I can't wait till I'm 13. I can't wait till I'm 18. And then the older people are kind of like, oh, it's such a blessing to be your age. And we keep hearing to hate them. We hate them telling us that. And then we get older and we go, oh, yeah, I can remember when I was that age. And I didn't have to worry about paying bills. And it's like, oh, yeah. We grow up always looking forward that we forget to just enjoy the fruits of our life that are right here. Now, by the way, I think if you go into the Old Testament, you'll see that God actually commanded them to enjoy the fruits of their life. Every time they took in, when they went out and brought in the crop, you know, they were one of the tithes that they were commanded to do something with was to simply enjoy one of the tithes. Why? Why were they not to just store it up for a future day and just, you know, not eat as little as they could today so that they could have more in the future? It's an enjoy. He actually gave them kind of a concept. You know, take a portion of all that you produce and enjoy it. Maybe if it's a little bit, go do something little with it. If it's a lot, go do something a lot with it. But enjoy with a portion that he has given you. Because, actually, as scriptures teach us, all things to be enjoyed come from him. He's the one that tells us that. And so, the idea of extraordinary life, love, work, and enjoy, I will call it. The thief comes only to kill and destroy. John 10:10, I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. Have it beyond the ordinary. Love indeed. Let's read this passage. In 1 John chapter 3. Starting in verse 10. And John has a lot of passages about love, but I just thought I'd pull out this little section. He says, by this it is evident who are the children of God and who are the children of the devil. Whoever does not practice righteousness is not of God, nor is the one who does not love his brother. For this is the message that you have heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. We should not be like Cain, who was of the evil one, murdered his brother. Why did he murder him? Because his own deeds were evil and his brother's righteous. Do not be surprised, brother, that the world hates you. We know that we have passed out of death into life because we love the brothers. Whoever does not love abides in death. Everyone who hates his brother is a murderer. And you know that no murderer has eternal life abiding in him. By this we know love, that he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brothers. But if anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, yet closes his heart against him, how does God's love abide in him? Little children, let us not love in word or in talk, but in deed and in truth. And by a deed, he means action. We need to love each other. And not just the ones we know here, but we need to love our neighbors, and we need to love our enemies, and we need to love strangers. That is what it comes down to, is having love. Loving others. And generally, when we love others, then, in fact, the principle goes from God that what we, sow is what we reap, right? So. Now, this passage, by the way, too, 1 Corinthians 16:14, let all that you do be done in love. That's what God has been teaching us and urging us. It goes back to the very first and most prominent commandments he gave to Israel. Love God with all your heart, with all your mind, soul, with all your heart, mind, soul. And then to love your neighbor as yourself. To love God and love your neighbor. It's all based upon that concept. Everything hangs on it, Jesus said. In Proverbs, now talk about the work idea of it a little bit. Look at Proverbs 14:23. In all toil there is profit, but mere talk tends to poverty, only to poverty. And the idea of profit, in all work there is something profitable. And the word profit does not necessarily mean money. All work has profit. Is there a lot of work that you do that doesn't make you money? Yeah. I would argue probably, think about your house. And think about what it takes. You go and make money so that you can furnish a house, you can pay for the house, you can buy food. That's only a small portion of all the work we do. We have to then clean the house. We've got to keep the house up. We've got to, do laundry and cook the food, and all of that stuff is work. It all has profit. It's just like when we talk about a mother stays at home, she's working, isn't she? She's not. The idea of working moms. Every mom, unless she's essentially a derelict. Every mom works. It's just a lot of the work doesn't earn actual income. But is it profitable? Yeah. But then dads do that too, don't they? They might do work. So when the idea concept of working moms is, okay, we're working plus doing this other work. But that really is everybody's life. Everybody works in multiple ways. And it all is profitable. But if we just jibber-jabber all the time, then tends towards poverty, he tells us. Now, Ecclesiastes chapter 2 and 24, we know that in the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon is essentially giving us the outcome of his search for the meaning of life, the purpose of life under the sun. And he actually says in some parts of it that he just hated it. He saw the busyness that we have to do as people, and I just hated life. But every so often, he kind of brings in this little passage, but these are the gifts God has given us. He says, there is nothing better for a person than he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. his work. This also I saw is from the hand of God. Now, I think we make the mistake, and I think there, if you do like hear about, well, okay, here's what millennials want, right? And workforce is all into, what do millennials want? Well, I think we ought to figure out how do we get millennials want stuff maybe better, but they go, what do millennials want? They want to find passion. They want to find a job that they're passionate about. And that's good. You want to find enjoyment in your work. The question is anybody passionate about digging up a sewer line that's broken? Now, I've done that work. I've dug up sewer lines that were broken. I've had a trench open, and I've had people even use them as I'm standing in the trench. I've experienced all of that as in my life, in toiling in life. And yet, still, I remember some of those. Actually, I remember that incident part because it was my partner who did it. It actually is incredibly, it sticks in my brain. It's, at the time, it was worse than I remember it. But I think what we make the mistake saying, I want to find work that I like, that I'm passionate about. And I think what he's saying is, you know, whatever work there is to do, you need to find enjoyment in the work that is there is to do. In fact, didn't I quote Mary Poppins in this last year? Doesn't Mary Poppins say something about that? Julie would probably remember. About finding the good in whatever there is to do. And I think that's what God's talking about. There's a lot of work that needs to get done. We just don't want to go, I want to find the work I want to do. I only want to do what I want to do. I only want to do the things that I enjoy. That's not what he's saying. He's saying there's a lot of work. There's a lot of toil. There's a lot of things God has given man to be busy with. We need to find enjoyment in it. That's what he's telling us. To enjoy the ability to work. No matter what kind of work it is. Now, he's not saying, you know, don't seek out certain kinds of work if you desire that more than others. But whatever work you might be doing, find the enjoyment. Find the blessing there. Ecclesiastes 3, 9 to 13. To be joyful and do good. Enjoy the fruits of your toil. And here's the part I talk about in enjoying. So I'm going to turn over there to Ecclesiastes. Passage a little bit longer, so I didn't put it up here. But in Ecclesiastes 3, starting in verse 9. He says, what gain has the worker from his toil? And that's the same idea. What is the profit? How does it profit me to toil and work? He says, I have seen the business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. Think about your life. What do you have to do to be busy with? Well, let's see. Now, I don't do the laundry at our house. But when Monday mornings, Tuesdays come around, it's like, I got to go out and mow the lawns. I got to go edge, I got to trim, I got to pull the weeds. And the weeds just keep coming. And I've taken a lot of extraordinary measures to try and minimize that. But they just keep coming. I just got to go keep toiling at it. I hate it. But trying to find the enjoyment. I keep trying to find that enjoyment in that, by the way. And I've not. And it was funny, as kids, my brother, one of the reasons I didn't do it a lot as a kid, my younger brother loved doing that stuff. He loved working in the yard. I hated working in the yard. I think it was maybe because of allergies, though, too, because it always kicked up. But and so, you know, I didn't mind doing work, but I didn't like that work. So, but I've got to do it. So you find the good in it. Find the work, but find the enjoyment. But what I realize is when the yard is nice and clean, everything is clean in the yard, and we sit out on the back patio, what a blessing that is. Now, he's telling us we have a lot of work to be busy. We've got to cook the food, we gotta shop for the food, we've gotta make the food, all that stuff's busy work, right? And we have to do it every single day. Man, God has given us work to be busy with. He didn't create us and go, you know what? Well, we see at the beginning, he gave us a garden, right? Didn't have to do anything. He's like, well, okay, we're going to stop that. Now we're going to give you a lot of work to do, to be busy with. But he said, he has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. I perceive that there is nothing better for them than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. Also, that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. This is God's gift to man. There's nothing better than to enjoy essentially the fruit of your toil. That's what God gave us to do. You know, to love other people, to work, and then to enjoy the fruits of that work. And some of the enjoyment of the fruits of that work is actually sharing it with others and doing it, helping others, isn't it? It's not all about storing up for myself and getting bigger and bigger amounts of storage stuff. In fact, the concept of people accumulating stuff, have you ever wondered why so many storage facilities are being built around us all the time? Do you think Americans might have a bit of a hoarding problem? Just a question. And I've read that those businesses are very, very profitable. They're almost always mostly full. And the people that own them, so they dump a lot of money into it, right? They buy the property, they put all this stuff up, and they have almost nothing to do to keep them up. They pay usually one family, give them an apartment there to manage it. And it's like hardly any workers you have to pay. It's just people just keep coming and storing their extra stuff on your land, and they pay you money for it. Now, true life. Here's a passage we had read. As for the rich in this present age, and I would suggest to us that we all, you know, I heard this question recently. How many people in the world do you think would love to have your life? I think if we're honest with ourselves, we look at the world, all over the world, and how many would love to have the life we have? And I'm telling you, every single one of us, no matter from the poorest of us, and you know, how many people would love, would dream to have the life we have? And I think we need to not take that for granted. We need to live well with it, to be thankful for it. But we need to understand that we really are rich in blessings. And we need to understand, I think this concept of those who are rich in this present age falls on most Americans. Now, a lot of Americans are whining and complaining about that top 1% or the top 10%. There has always been a certain group of people at the very top who were so wealthy that you couldn't even imagine it. It happened in Rome 2,000 years ago. About, I think they said it was about, just a 1% or less of the whole population owned everything. Vast majority of people in the Roman Empire were slaves. And few people owned it all. And that happens in a lot of countries. It's happened throughout time in society. But life isn't in the accumulation of those things. But we need, if we have an abundance of stuff, if we are rich, charge them not to be haughty. Don't think having a bunch of stuff makes you better. That's one of the great temptations, is that having a bunch of stuff goes, oh yeah, see, look how great I am. Look how smart I am. Look how wonderful I am. The truth is, time and chance happen to everybody. You know, why does Bill Gates have his billions? He was bright guy, in the right place, the right time, studying the right thing when it was taking off. If he had been 20 years earlier, if he had been just as bright, but he had been that same age, he wouldn't have done that. He would have done something different. Because the world wasn't ready for that. And so all of us have time and chance, as Scripture tells us as well. But he says, don't set our hopes on uncertainty of riches. Don't be hopeful about stuff. But hope in God. That he who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. They are to do good. To be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is truly life. That's what he's saying. He says, you might think, and a lot of rich people fall into the temptation of thinking, whoa, this is the life. In fact, when I hear people say, this is the life, I picture people who have got some wealthy, you know, they got some car, some house, some, you know, they're sitting on the French Riviera, and they're going, this is the life. I think that quote almost speaks the idea of, I have an abundance, look how much stuff I have. But I think the idea of this is the life is something that we as Christians ought to be going, this life I have with Christ, this is the life. That's what I think he's trying to get us to see. That what we have with him, with having Christ, having that faith, having that belief, having that knowledge, having that confidence, that trust in the evidence of Christ, our Lord, that is truly the life. The ability to help and provide and give to others, to love other people, the ability to work and provide for myself, that is the life. And within that life, he has promised us in this world, there are going to be struggles. Sufficient for the day is its own troubles. That's why he tells us don't worry. Because we're going to have troubles. We're going to have struggles. Don't worry about it. But understand it. But enjoy the moments and the life that God has given. So just kind of wrap up. When the life of God dwells in me, it doesn't dwell in me because of my clothes or my cars or my houses or anything. It doesn't dwell in me with stuff. It doesn't dwell in me because of the flesh. But when it dwells in me and my spirit and my mind is set upon God, I can find the enjoyment in work. I can just whistle while I work. I can enjoy all things, food, wisdom, pleasure, wealth, that come my way is a gift of God. Whatever comes my way, however much it comes my way, I can be thankful for it. I can share these things with others as opportunity and abilities allow. I can love others and be loved in return. I can have an extraordinary life now and the promise of a glorious life still to come. I am looking forward to think it's going to be nothing but better. Now, so many people in the world are thinking, wow, life, everything's just so awful. Everything stinks. And it's like, you know, the world goes through ups and downs, good times, bad times, different countries, different times. But you know what? The promise to every one of us is that we are looking forward to something awesome. Something glorious. And that's his promise. And he gave his life to give us that promise. If you're here today, and if you need help, if you are struggling with something, one of the great blessings he gave us is a family of Christians that can be there when life is difficult, when we have the troubles, to have fellow brothers and sisters that we can enjoy time with or who can spend some time with us, who can pray for us, who can just sit with us, comfort us, whatever. One of the great blessings. But we kind of wrap up each of our meetings together, just trying to remind ourselves that we are here to help in any way we can, whether that's studying the scriptures with somebody that so they can know Christ and become a Christian, whether that is just helping a brother or sister who's struggling or having a difficulty that we don't yet know or understand. Whatever it might be, if you're here today and you need help, please let us know how we can help you. So together we stand and sing.